Okay, good evening, everyone. I'll try to be a little bit quicker than usual. I know Rosh Hashanah swiftly approaches, and we all have a lot to do, especially me. But I also wanted to do something a little bit related to Rosh Hashanah. So when I was doing when I was doing the Alshech, so I figured I would do something one of his comments relating to Rosh Hashanah. So Rav Moshe Alshech, I guess, is the third in our series of mystics and magic makers. To a certain extent, he's very much in the context of the other kind of Safed, Tzvat mystics. On the other hand, he's kind of his own person with his own responsibilities and his own kind of perspective on life, and we'll get into that. He was born in 1508, as you can see, in Adrianople, Turkey. And in 1535, he made Aliyah to Tzfat. Before he made Aliyah to Tzfat, and perhaps what inspired him to go to Tzfat in the first place, What made him perhaps go to Tzfat in the first place was that he was a student in Turkey of Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. And very much like Rav Yosef Karo, he was known not so much for his mysticism, but during his day, he was known for his halachic positions that he took. He was known, he wrote over 400, over 400 teshuvot to various places in the Middle East at the time, and was known to as really the go-to person on a lot of halachic issues. So he was a student of Rav Yosef Karo in Turkey. In 1535, he makes Aliyah to Tzfat, and very quickly he becomes known as HaKadosh, as one of the holy. He's one of very few people who get this title. The other one is the Or HaChaim HaKadosh and the Shla HaKadosh and the Ari HaKadosh. So he's one of only four who get this. Some people put Rashi in the equation also, but he gets the title of the Holy. He's also just kind of contributing to his kind of mystical qualities. He's the teacher of Rav Chaim Vital. Rav Chaim Vital was, of course, one of the great codifier of the the Ari of Rav Yitzchak Luria's mysticism, Lurianic mysticism, but Rav Chaim Vital also, in one of his collections on the mysticism of Rav Yitzchak Luria, he has a book called Shar HaGilgulim. In Shar HaGilgulim, he basically gives Rav Yitzchak Luria the Ari's theory of reincarnation. That the Ari was apparently able to point at people and say, this person is a reincarnated version of this person, and this person, and this person. And according to Rav Chaim Vital, the Ari said of Rav Moshe Alshech that he was a reincarnation of Ravina. Who is Ravina? Ravina was one of the redactors of the Babylonian Talmud, which also may be a statement very much about one of the Alshech's main philosophical bents, or the thing that he took on for himself as his main responsibility, which was collecting and bringing together some of the varying different interpretations of his time. There's a whole question. There's all this lore about him as to whether he was a student of Rav Yitzchak Luria of the Ari or not. The story goes amongst the Kabbalists, and it's been quoted in a number of Sfarim, is that the Alshech went to Rav Yitzchak Luria and asked to be a student and a Kabbalist, and Rav Yitzchak Luria apparently responded that you have a goal and a responsibility that is different in life, and you will never be one of my official students. Whatever that's supposed to mean. And if you look through some of his works, you'll see that Rav Yitzchak Luria, that he's very much, to a certain extent, Kabbalism light. You'll never see kind of the hardcore mystical thinking that you'll find in other texts. That being said, there's clearly a subtext of mysticism in his works. There are all these other stories, very much miracle stories about him, about one of them, about his notorious patience. The story goes that God was bragging about the patience of Rav Moshe Alshech, and the Satan was given permission to test him, kind of in the very much parallel to Eov, to Job. And he comes to him on Erev Shabbos, and he asks him for food, and the Alshech brings him food, and then he wants more food, and there isn't enough food in the world to satiate him, to the point where the Alshech has given up all of his possessions and gone to borrow from all of the neighbors in order to see to it that he's fed properly. And so that way God can celebrate the fact that he was such a wonderfully committed. I don't know whether that story is true or not. I can't say. What I do know is true is that he was known for the excellence of his sermons. His sermons were attended far and wide, and apparently the Torah of his sermons was disseminated far and wide as well. That's because at the end of his life, in his 70s, he all of a sudden became a prolific author. And began writing down a number of his sermons. Why did he suddenly write down a number of his sermons? He said, because everyone is using all of my stuff, you know, telling over my Divrei Torah, and not attributing them to me. So I'm going to write it in a book, so this way it's known who it is that is behind it. It turns out he had a great deal to say. He wrote a Sefer on Chumash, which is a collection of his sermons on Chumash, as well as on almost every Sefer in all of Tanakh. And he wrote an introduction to Daniel, a commentary on Mishlei. He wrote on everything, I think, except for Yechezkel. He didn't write about the Alshech. And kind of one of the things that is unique, I don't know if it's unique, but it's certainly something that you'll notice from the first second when you read any of his svarim, is that he's extraordinarily verbose. One of his comments on a pasuk in Chumash can go 4, 5, 6 pages long, which is why later generations took it upon themselves to shorten them. The only thing I can assume is that, you know, in the days before people had iPads, iPhones, televisions and computers to keep themselves busy. So what would be more entertaining than a charismatic, teacher with great stories to tell, etc. One of the things you'll see, so I wrote here, he had a broad range of commentaries on Tanakh. We spoke about probably one of the broadest in history. You'd have to go back maybe to Rashi or the, and you know, later on you'll get the Malbim, but you'd be hard pressed to find someone who had more of a broad range of commentaries. One of the beauties of it is the elegance of his interpretation. We'll see it. We'll do one inside that he had on Rosh Hashanah, but there's a certain elegance to it. It's kind of an interweaving of Midrash and Pshat, of, you know, kind of the simple interpretation popular in the Sephardic school in which he was raised, but also kind of this very elegant, hermeneutical, homiletical type of interpretation that is kind of the quality of some of the more modernist interpretations. One of the things you'll see as you read it is, even though the Shla, the Shnei Luchos HaBris, gets a lot of the credit as being kind of the preceding philosophical inspiration for Hasidism and the perspective of Hasidism on the Torah, a lot of what you find in Hasidus, you'll find also in the Alshech, kind of his mystical perspective that he has there. As I said, first and foremost, he considered himself a posek, he considered himself a halachist. In his introduction to the Torah Moshe, which is his work on Chumash, so he says, Minurai, from my childhood, and this is on the sheet, Gedalani Ka'av Esek Ba'Talmud Marbe B'Yeshiva. He says, in my life I was raised as someone who was involved in the yeshiva. Halayla Iyun V'Hayom Halacha, at night I would delve into the inner recesses of Talmudic and Halachic discussions, and at night, and during the day, I would discuss the practical Psak Halacha. He says, "V'lo libi halach lasos l'kava midrashos upshatim." He says, "It wasn't in my heart to go off seeking out homiletical interpretations. Rak le'eitz mitzo menucha mehalacha bayom hashishi. He says, when would I do it? On Fridays, he said, I would sit down, you know, I'd be mavir sedra, I'd look through the parsha, and as part of my looking through the parsha and my research in that, I would come up with these kind of hermeneutical explanations. Interestingly enough, in terms of what's lasted from the Al-Sheikh's statements, it's not his, you know, halachic works, but his homiletical works, which have kind of dominated in terms of his legacy. Hiki Shabbos b'Shabbaso, he says, each Shabbos, what happens? Why did these become so big? Yavo elai ha'am l'droshahem al piyat Torah mikrai kodesh. He says, the Balabatim would come over, and they want to hear me, you know, converse about the Parsha. So, you know, they don't want to hear me, you know, give my pshad in a tosfos and yavamos. That's not what they were looking for. What they were looking for were homiletical interpretations. Asher yikruo sabam adam, Parsha, Parsha, be'erv yom ha'Shabbos. So on Friday afternoons, people would come. They would come over to his house, and he would, you know, speak on the weekly portion more homiletically, and that's what became popular. You know, it could be that the Ari was very much, you know, aware of his strengths in that area, and therefore, you know, he brought him away from the more hidden mystical interpretations and pushed him more towards the interpretive and, you know, the more nigla of parsha interpretation, and that's where he kind of went and took his life in that area. He died at an old age for those days in his mid to late 80s. He famously went to raise money for the Tzvat community in his 80s, and one of his major laments was he lived to see the downfall of the Tzvat community. It started to fray and fall apart towards the end of his life, and he even wrote a kina about it. Not only did he write keynote, which we do not say, but I believe Sfaradim say, but he wrote keynote about the fall of the Beis HaMikdash. He also wrote a kina about the slowly deterioration of Tzfat, which a lot of it had to do with economics in general. So that's kind of an overview of the life of Rav Moshe Alshich. So now let's learn a little bit of his Torah. So on Parsha, if you're ever looking for what someone says about various holidays, so you go to one of, and all he did was wrote a commentary on Chumash, so you go to one of three places. Either you go to Parshas Emor, which has the first list of the holidays, or you go to Parshas Pinchas, where it has the list of the Korban Musaf, right? That's where you always get the Maftir from. Or you go to Parshas Re'eh, which is kind of part two or another aspect of the holidays that's also written. So this one happens to be in Parshas Re'eh. In Parshas Re'eh, he starts discussing Rosh Hashanah, and he quotes a famous Gemara of Rav Krospedai in Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara goes as follows: Amar Rav Krospedai, Shlosha Tzvarim Niftachim B'Rosh Hashanah. Rav Krospedai says that three books are open on Rosh Hashanah. Echad Shel Tzadikim, Gemurim. One is of the exceptionally righteous, the Echad Shel Rishayim Gemurim, and the other is of the exceptionally evil, the Echad Shel Beinonim, and one is of the middlers, the mediocre people, the people who are in the middle. So the famous statement of what is a Beinoni? A Beinoni is someone who his mitzvos and his averos are exactly balanced. So Rav Krospedai continues, Shel Rishayim Gemurim, Nechtavim v'nechtamin la'alter l'misa. So the exceptionally evil, what happens to them? God writes them down, and he seals them for death right away, meaning on Rosh Hashanah. Shel tzadikim gemurim, the exceptionally righteous, nechtavim v'nechtamin la'alter l'chayim, they are written immediately and sealed immediately for a year of life. Interestingly enough, you'll notice there's the famous in Aresha Sifasenu, right? What do we say? Totzila or Mishpatenu. So Hayom or Ayom, right? So if you say Hayom, the reason a lot of the Machzorim change it from Hayom to Ayom is because if you declare that you're going to judge me today, meaning on Rosh Hashanah, Hayom, today, so what does that mean? It means you're either exceptionally righteous, which would be a bold prediction about yourself, or you're exceptionally evil. Either one, you know, you wouldn't want that either. The best thing that we most assume is that we're Beinonim, you know, we're middlers, and that we're going to be, you know, held up until Yom Kippur or maybe till Hoshana Rabbah. So for those of us, you know, in the Beinoni camp, it's not worth, you know, it's bold to say Hayom. It's dangerous to say Hayom if you're going to be evil. So we change it to Ayom, or actually the change goes back generations already. It goes back all the way to the Middle Ages to change to Ayom. But that's just so you know why there's the little bit of debate there. Why? Because Beinonim Tluyim Ba'omdim Mirosh Hashanah V'Yad Yom HaKippurim. Beinonim, they're written in this third book, and they sit and they wait until Yom Kippur. Zachu, if they're worthy, Nechtavim L'Chaim, they're written down for life. Lo Zachu, but if they're not worthy, so then Nechtavim L'Misa, they're written down for death. So the Al-Sheikh asks what he thinks are two very obvious questions here. Right? It's already a good drasha. He's got two questions. So and it's an even better drasha because each question answers the other question. So you're going to see he does all the he counts on all the homiletical points. You know, it's like he could have gone to Reitz, you know, and taken homiletics with Rabbi Lookstein. So what does he say? He says, number one, he says, what's this zachu or lo zachu? What does that mean? If he's worthy, he gets put in the book of life. If he's unworthy, he gets put in Chas v'Shalom, the book of death. So if you look in the Rambam, when the Rambam codifies this in Hilchos Tshuva, in Hilchos Rosh Hashanah, excuse me, when the Rambam codifies this, the Rambam says, Asu Tshuva, if they do Teshuva, then they go, you know, they're written down in the book of life. If they didn't do Teshuva, they're written down Chas v'Shalom, the opposite. So asks Rav Moshe Alshich, he says, wait a minute, that's all fine and dandy, Rambam, that you explain it that way, but that's not what it says. Rav Krus Bedai knows full well what teshuva is, so if he wanted to tell us to do teshuva, he should have said, shavu, then you get put down in the book of life. Lo shavu, you know, then you go put back down in there. Why do you say, if you do tshuva, fine. If you don't, he doesn't say that. He says, zachu. He says, if you are worthy. That's what he says. So that's question number one that Rav Moshe Alshich asks. Rav Moshe Alshich asks a second question. He says, why do you need three svarim? He says, if I were doing it, you know, if I were God's secretary, what would I have done? I would have said two svarim. You have one sefer. You write down all the people who are going to be who are going to be for life, all the exceptionally righteous. In another sefer, you have all the people who are exceptionally evil. And the third, don't write them anywhere. Okay, wait till Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, you either put them in the book of life or the book of death. What's this with the third book? What do we gain? The Al-Sheikh asks from the third book. So here, he says, obviously, the questions answer each other, right? I'm sure you were all thinking that from the first second you heard the question. So what does he say? He says, what's the difference between a zuchus and a teshuva? So he says, teshuva is what do? I go back, I research my entire life. I start looking through all the good things I've done, all the bad things I've done. I take out the bad things I've done, and I say, I regret that I've ever done them. These are the bad things I've done, oh God, and I don't intend on ever doing them again, and hopefully you forgive me for them. That's what teshuvah is. What's a zchus? A zchus. I gave tzedakah, this should be a zchus that I should have a good day. I said moda'ani with kavana, it should be a zchus that I should have a good day. I ate Pas Yisrael today instead of Pas Palter. It should be a zchus that I have a good day. A zchus, he says, is merely something that you do. Any mitzvah can be a zchus, right? It's not, a zchus doesn't require this intensive type of investment and introspection and et cetera within it. So he says, that's the difference between them. And so when Rav Krus Bedai was saying Zachu, he means that in order to really change your lot between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you don't need Teshuvah. What do you need? You need Zachuyos. Which, if I were putting it, I guess, on a hierarchy or on some sort of level, so Teshuvah would require an effort of, let's say, 10. A zechus would require an effort of, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 if it's a big zechus. You know, you could think of a lot of things. And he says, And this is related very much to why God needs three svarim and not two svarim. He says why. He says, what do tzaddikim gemurim need to do? They need to not mess it up. You have 10 days. You've reached a level that, you know, few people in this world have written. I can imagine that the book of tzaddikim gemurim is probably not the largest book in the world, the thickest book in the world. Hopefully neither is the book of Rishayim Gemurim, you know, hopefully they're little pamphlets. But in either case, the Tzadikim Gemurim, their job is not, don't mess it up, okay? Basically, hold the fort, do what you need to do, whatever it is. If you need to learn Torah 15 hours a day, learn your Torah 15 hours a day. If it's that, you know, you daven with Kavana three times a day, then daven with Kavana. Don't mess it up. What about Rishayim? Rishayim Gemurim, they need to uproot themselves from a terrible book, right? They have become so entrenched in Averos. They do Averos, Rav Alshech explains, how do they do Averos? They do Averos in a kum va'aseh. They get up and they do Averos, okay? So for them, the only thing that's going to save a Russia from potential destruction over this year is if he does immense teshuvah. He needs to do the 10. He needs to invest so much that ultimately that this will change his life for the better. That's all that a Russia can do. Okay, but what about a Beinoni? So he says a Beinoni, he says, sins b'sheva al ta'asa. A Beinoni sins in a way that basically, he's not, you know, us middle-level people, we don't sin, you know, because we believe in sin. We sin because we're lazy. We sin because, you know, we don't think about things. We sin. He says this, he says, it doesn't require teshuvah. What does it require? A zechus. Why? Because the scales for this person are balanced, right? They're basically even. So what are you going to put on? You're going to start uprooting your Averos? He says, that's one way you could do it. You know, you can start, you know, ripping out your Averos out of the ground. Fine. You know, that's one way of doing it. Or what can you do? If you have scales that are exactly even, I could throw more stuff onto the mitzvah side and pull it over. So that's what Rav Kruspedai says. He says, you know what it means to be a Beinoni? Don't panic, okay? Don't panic. Don't go crazy that, you know, oh my God, I'm going to die, I'm a Beinoni. No, a Beinoni means you need to make some corrections in your life. You need to start doing more positive things within your life. And by doing more positive things in your life, guess what? You're going to tip the scales to the positive. That's why he says, it says twice, but when it comes to Rosh Hashanah in particular, it says Lemor twice. It says, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor. Okay, and then it says b'chodesh hashvi'i b'echad l'chodesh leimor zichron trura mikra kodesh yalachem. So he says, why does it say leimor? He says, because there are two separate experiences. Experience number one is we have to leimor to the Rishayim Gemurim and say, guess what? What do you got to do? You got to do teshuvah. Okay, and to the Beinonim, he says, not teshuvah, but you need to make positive corrections. You need to find more zchuyos in your life in order to correct it. It's interesting. I always think, you know, Rabbi Seif mentioned it on Shabbos, but it's worth repeating, that there's this very odd statement in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Ramah. The Ramah says that during the 10 days of teshuvah, what should you do? You shouldn't eat, you know, pas palter. You shouldn't eat bread made by non-Jews, even though generally we don't have this chumrah. But, you know, during the 10 days of Teshuvah, you should eat what? Pas Yisrael, right? Only bread that was made, that was baked by a Jew. So what kind of hypocrites are we? So according to the way Rav Moshe Alshech explains it, I think it's clear, right? What's that? It's a zchus, right? You're putting more on your side of the scale, tipping it in the right direction. You're a Beinoni. You know you're a Beinoni. These 10 days are the time when Beinonis are judged. So therefore, since I know I'm a Beinoni, what am I going to do? Any other zchus that I can get, anything else that I can put on the side that's ultimately going to bring it out into the positive is worth my doing. What you see here is ultimately, what is this? This is a homiletical interpretation of a Talmudic verse. But what does he do? He goes back ultimately to a pshat question, to a question on the pasuk as to why it has lemor twice. Once he's going back into the pasuk, so the pasuk itself, he requires a bit more interpretation. So he has the question of zichron trua. What does zichron trua mean? So zichron trua, you probably know, zichron means the memory of trua, of the sound. The trua sound is the broken sound of the shofar. So what does that mean? Mikroi kodesh, a day that is called holy. How does that work? So we know from our tefillos that the only time zichron trua will make it into our tefillos is on when Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah coincide, right? You can't call it a yom trua. Right? So you only call it a zichron trua. So the question is, why is the Torah calling it zichron trua in the first place? The Torah should just call it a yom trua. What's zichron trua? So here he says, he has a pshat in trua. He says, trua is milashon ri'iyun. Right? What does ri'iyun mean? Ri'iyun, so in modern Hebrew, lira'ayin means to interview someone. With an aleph, but they're related words. Okay, but ri'iyun, he said, is to research or to investigate your life. Okay, that was ri'iyun, that's what ri'iyun means. Okay, so what does he say? So he says, when does the day become Mikroi Kodesh? When does the day of Rosh Hashanah become a day of unbridled happiness and one that's called holy? When it's Zichron Trua, when it's merely a memory of those who had to do the major investigations of their lives in order to improve. So that's what he says, that's the day we dream of. We dream of a day when there's no Rishayim Gemurim, when there's no, you know, exceptionally evil people, and therefore the need for teshuva is not there. And what do you just need? You only need the need for zchuya. So then the question is, why do we do teshuva at all if we're so confident that we are Beinonim and we're being written actually in the book of Beinonim? And that's and God needs that third book. So he says that you know, that's our zchus, is when we do teshuva. So he says that's the ultimate act of Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. Because what are we doing? We're doing teshuvah on behalf of all the people who might be Rishayim. Because our dream is, we know that perfection will only come when everyone is working together in that sense. So that is kind of Rav Moshe Alshech. Like I said, you see here, the notion of a status of Beinoni is basically going to dominate more mystical works like the Baal HaTanya. Rav Shneur Zalman of Ladi, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, in his Tanya, this is, in his Igeres HaTshuva, this is kind of his philosophical approach, his philosophical bent. You know, it's kind of like, this is the, this is really the statement of who we are. You know, we are Beinonim. We are these middling people, and it's a powerful statement. And one of the things I noticed, as you know, every time I do one of these, so it gives me the opportunity to kind of, you know, research into something. So one of the things you find in the Alshech is a lot of the themes that flow through Hasidus and through other homiletical works throughout history are really very much based on the Alshech. Probably people felt they could use it because no one was going to slodge through a massive Alshech. So if I can summarize it for you, you know, like I took here, this was 3 pages I just summarized for you, and that was in the Toras Moshe HaKatzar, the shortened or the abridged version of the Toras Moshe, which I can only imagine is that the original was significantly longer. And thank God for iPads, I don't actually have to buy the book, I can get it on PDF format. What's also interesting is just other things. I was talking to Rabbi Carmi, I think it was a few years ago, and he pointed out to me that Rav Soloveitchik has kind of this very literary interpretation of Shir HaShirim as kind of this eternal searching between the dod and the ra'aya, of the ra'aya for the dod, of the female beloved for her male beloved, this constant searching. And it's very, very much based on the Alshech. Do I know whether the Rav read the Al Shech or not. I have no idea whether the Rav read the Al Shech or not. I just know that you have kind of this type of interpretation. And I think all of it, it's kind of sad that it's so long that it really, you know, people only get it in snippets. But I don't know, in my mind, the more I read of it, the more engaging and interesting it is. And I think just the more potential it has. There have been a bunch of books that have been written in English as well on the Al Shech. There's actually, I just found, as I was doing some research, there's a whole Al Shech Institute in Israel that's run out of Tzfat. The Al Shech is buried in the Great Cemetery in Tzfat, as he was one of really the last of the Safed Pietists or Kabbalists in the area. I don't know if there's any lore associated with his gravesite. I'm sure every tour guide has a certain story associated with his gravesite. I don't know if there is or if there isn't, but he's just an interesting person. We know very little about his life, but it seems like he was an extraordinarily popular educator and leader during those times, and I think it was his job, if I could ask anything, you know, maybe what the Ari meant when he was a Gilgal, a reincarnated of Ravina, is that it was his job to take the esoteric hermeneutical interpretations and bring them to the masses in kind of a clear and concise way, and which is what he did. You know, he was his sermons were known far and wide, and you know, people would come from all over to hear them, and that is the Al Shech in a nutshell.
Just a comment.
Yeah.
If you really want to do true Arayon, yeah, why don't you say true Arayon with an ayin? Ayin with an ayin means thought, means ideas.
It could be that's what he means. I mean, everyone has a little bit of a vort on trua in general.
I got my vort then.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. All right. You know, it could be Ra'ua, Shaky, I mean, it could be Rea, a friend, I mean, wherever you want to take it, you go. Okay, that's the thing I can tell you. All right. All right, thank you.